the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There are an awful lot of kids who go into libraries these days, but given what the librarians are reporting, a lot of them actually aren't, doing what we used to go into libraries for, reading books. Instead, the library's been turned into a multimedia center, an information nexus, where kids are going in to look on the Internet, to do database searches, and to check out the DVDs, CDs, and other electronic media, but they're not reading books. At my website at albertmohler.com last week, I wrote an article which was citing a statement made by the librarian of a very elite public school in the Washington, D.C. area, in which he said, look, kids just aren't reading. They're not reading books. He happens to be a librarian in a senior high department. But beyond that, we also have the reports that kids at younger ages often aren't reading either. Are we raising a generation of kids who don't read? And by the way, kids who don't read grow up to be adults who don't read. Now, the secular world, the librarians, English professors and all, they're all upset about this, as you might imagine. But I would suggest that as Christian parents, we must be even more concerned, because Christianity is a faith and a discipleship of literacy. And by the way, the Old Testament people of God, the Jewish people, were and are the same way. Because why? Because we believe that God has spoken to us in an inscripturated, that is a written revelation. And that's why the Judeo-Christian heritage has been a heritage that has represented the necessity of expanding literacy. And by the way, when you think about even the Sunday school movement, a lot of people don't understand that Sunday schools were originally schools to teach the street children how to read. They expanded into Bible studies in the local church and all the rest. But Christianity has been about literacy. And the understanding is that Christian discipleship includes the need to read and to use the capacity God has given us to read the great spiritual classics, to read using the imagination, to read discipling the mind. If our children grow up not reading books, we are in big trouble. I want to know about your kids. I want to know, especially from parents. We're also going to be talking to some educators, and we are going to have as a very special guest one of the people in this country who is best placed to talk about the decline of reading. Bruce Cole, who is chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities in Washington, D.C. It's going to be an honor to have Chairman Cole on in just a few moments in the second segment, but I also want you to get ready to call. I'd love to know what Christian parents are doing to encourage your children to read. I want to know if you're alarmed about this. And if so, what are you encouraging your children to read? The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, a review of some issues in the news. I want to go back to some of the things we talked about yesterday. And when we were talking about modern science without moral limits, and it seems like every day is bringing an entire tidal surge of new developments that raise unthinkable moral dilemmas. Let me just mention a couple of them to you. The New York Times today, a major story on the possibility of womb transplants. The headline, Prospect of Womb, that's W-O-M-B, transplant, raises hopes and red flags. According to this news story from the New York Times, doctors at a New York downtown hospital had harvested wombs from 8 brain-dead human donors, laying the groundwork for the first human uterine transplant in the Western world. And when women heard about this, they called by large numbers wanting to be the first living donor, the first living recipient of a transplanted womb. You can understand that a woman who may have had difficulty or be having difficulty conceiving and bringing a child to birth might be interested in this, but this also raises all kinds of flags about how far we're willing to go with reproductive technologies. And, of course, the interesting thing is, could by some future development a womb be transplantable into a man? And that just raises all kinds of difficult questions. And when the New York Times takes this seriously and does a major news story on it, admitting the moral quandaries, that tells you something about where we are. Now, speaking about where we are, well, USA Today, major news story, again, about frozen embryos. And we've taken this on several times. This is the front page of today's USA Today. Each stored embryo is a stem cell debate. Well, not only a stem cell debate, because even when they have nothing directly to do with the potential of human embryonic stem cell research, they have to do with the stewardship of human life. USA Today begins by introducing a woman by the name of Ingrid Jansen, who is looking through frozen nitrogen at frozen embryos conceived for her in a petri dish 4 years ago. According to the papers, the first time she's eyed the surplus, that's an interesting word, isn't it, from the in vitro fertilization procedure that brought her son Dylan, now three, into the world. It's surreal, she says. I don't think about them much because I have two children at home that keep me busy. Well, they're not thinking about them as much is the big problem, isn't it? Because right now we have hundreds of thousands of abandoned human embryos. I say abandoned in that they are not now under any plan to be implanted in a human womb. And so what we have are thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands by estimate, of frozen human embryos. Now, listen to this. This woman and her husband are at odds about what to do with these so-called surplus embryos. Jansen herself, and I'm reading here from the paper, who is not religious, wants to donate her embryos for research. Now, listen to this carefully. She says giving them to an infertile couple is, quote, not an option, end quote, because, quote, it would be like giving away my own child, my own DNA, end quote. Now, let's just take this woman's logic for a moment. She's saying that she would rather them be destroyed than be adopted. Now, I'm going to tell you that I'm very confident that this woman would not say the same thing about a living and breathing child. I'm very confident that she would not want, one of her children to be destroyed rather than adopted should something happen to her. So what she's making here is an absolute distinction between the moral status of her embryo, which she acknowledges is her DNA, and the living child. Well, that's just unsustainable. And it's just, to me, absolutely bizarre that this woman would say, I'd rather them be destroyed than adopted. Her husband, by the way, who identifies himself as a Catholic, says he objects. He says stem cell research, which dismantles embryos, quote, is destroying human life, end quote. And he opposes it for what he calls his son's siblings. You talk about a little marital conflict here. Here you have one party, the mom, the wife, who says she'd rather them be destroyed than adopted, and then you have the husband who refers to these embryos as his son's siblings. Well, I think he's exactly right. But just think about how this technology got them in this situation in the first place. The story ends, by the way, citing another mom by in vitro fertilization, Alexandra Chisholm Chait. She identifies herself as, quote, a person of faith, end quote, which can mean anything, but says government should not be, quote, instituting religious or, that's what it says, instituting religious morality on research, end quote. Well, what kind of morality are you going to institute, Ms. Chisholm Chait? I mean, that's the big question, isn't it? And the insinuation here is that anyone who has a moral concern for the status of the embryo has to be driven by some kind of religious concern. Well, everyone has religious concern, even those who say they aren't religious. The determination of what it means to be human and the very essence of human life is it's worldview directed. And you can call that worldview religious or irreligious, but the bottom line is you're going to try to impose your morality on someone. And in this case, of course, the human embryo. I'm going to talk for just a moment here about something that, it's a little more difficult to talk about, but it just tells you again where we are. Israeli courts have given a set of parents in Israel the right to use their dead son's sperm to inseminate a woman he would never know. When he died as a soldier in Israel, they took his sperm and have held it in collection, and they want to be grandparents. So they're going to have this this semen to inseminate a woman in order that she can bear them grandchildren. Now, again, we're talking about a weird, weird world here. And we're talking about a very strange conception of personal autonomy and rights when these grandparents, or they're not grandparents yet, the parents of this young man are told by a court that they have a right to be grandparents. I mean, this is absolutely bizarre. A right to be grandparents, even if their son is dead. Now, can you imagine this son is now dead to become a father, through a mom that he has never even met? An absolute right to be grandparents. That's a new one. But, hey, yesterday we talked about an absolute right to be a mom. 67-year-old woman who lied to get in vitro fertilization and is now realizing, after she has twin boys, that she's not going to be able to handle this. And so she's looking for a younger man as a husband. We talked about this yesterday. More information out today, reported by William Salatan. Highlights are this. Not only did she lie in order to break off the clinic's age cutoff, she bought eggs and sperm by choosing, quote, from photos in a catalog. She went on and said, I'm quoting the woman here, it was a bit like studying an estate agent's brochure and choosing the house. She went through menopause 18 years ago. She said she was inspired by magazine stories of older women giving birth. The pregnancy put such stress on her aging body that doctors barely kept it going long enough to deliver her twins 7 weeks prematurely at 3.5 pounds each. And when they begin toddling, she says, I'll get one of those playpens and put them in there. Because, after all, she doesn't have the energy to actually parent these two toddlers. Well, guess what? She wasn't intended to be a mom of toddlers at 67. She says at the end, people shouldn't judge me. Well, that's what everyone wants to say, right? Just don't judge me. Who are you to judge? Humanity is being redefined in the process. We'll be back to talk about reading and your children. Do your children read? If so, what? If not, are you concerned? The number 877-893-8255, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back, folks. Thomas Washington is a librarian at an illustrious prep school in the D.C. area, the nation's capital. He's written a recent article he calls a lament to the Washington Post. He talks about the kids at his school. They obviously are privileged economically and in other ways. They have no problem of access to books. And yet, as the librarian, he says, look, they come into the library, but they don't touch the books. The books are gathering dust, in his words. He says the library itself has been turned into something about information literacy, not actually about reading books. It's about data searches and information retrieval. And he's talking about kids, and he says, you know, as I look at them, they're just not reading books. So I have to tell you, that sends off alarm bells to me. And when I start looking at a librarian like this, writing his own lament, I have to say also, as an observer of the culture, this is a big, big issue. And, of course, there really are more than one issue. There's the issue of not only the fact they're not reading, and then those who are, there's the issue of what they are reading. We could take this in many different ways. But the big issue here is the fact that many kids just aren't reading. And we have with us today as our special guest, Bruce Cole, who is chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. He was chosen for two terms for this, nominated by President George W. Bush in 2005. His reappointment was unanimously approved by the United States Senate. He is a Renaissance art historian. And sitting in the nation's capital atop one of our major federal programs, he has a unique vantage point to understand our situation. Chairman Cole, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on it.
Well, tell me, is this an exaggeration, this lament from this high school librarian, or are you really seeing across the country kids and young adults just not reading?
Well, this is a big problem because it seems to me that reading is the key to everything. I remember my own experience. I actually grew up in a house that didn't have any books in it, but I had great parents, but they just weren't interested in books. But my mother was an avid crossword puzzle fan, and she bought a set of World Book encyclopedias. And I remember that I got onto those World Book encyclopedias, and I just read and read and read. And that sparked my interest in so many things, but I could only do that because I could read. Reading is absolutely important. You've got to not only read books, but read a job application, or it's the key to success. And at the National Endowment for the Humanities here, we have a big initiative to improve the teaching and understanding of American history. And our kids really don't know enough about history. They don't really know in this perilous time what their liberties are. And if you can't define them, you can't defend them. But before we can get those things out, kids need to know how to read.
Well, whose fault is it that they're not reading, Chairman Cole? You know, are you going to point to parents or schools or what?
I think a lot of this is the culture. There are so many things out there, television and radio and now, MP3 players and
the computer.
Computer, exactly. And I want to say right away that I'm not opposed to the computer and the web. But I think there, you can think about it in this way. There, and this is not my idea, but there are two kind of books. There's the what we might call the warm book and the cold book. The warm book is the kind of book that you read in a sustained, contemplative way. It has a narrative. You read it for instruction and enlightenment and pleasure. And then there are what I would call the cold books. And those are the kind of books that can be on the web, reference books and dictionaries and the like. And there, I think there is some crossover, some dovetailing between those two worlds. But the book is a great technology. It's, I don't think it's ever going to be replaced. And you need books for all those things I just said.
Well, you have to be able to read, and reading to me, as I think of it personally, but also as I observe it as an educator, is an infectious thing. One of the interesting things we have here, and we have both a college and a graduate school here, Chairman Cole, and we have students that come here who have never read a book.
Yeah.
And, I ask a student who's getting ready to graduate, because they can't graduate here without reading hundreds and hundreds of books, and seriously being able to retain the information. And I said, "What's the biggest change in your life? Not so much spiritually, but just in terms of what you do and never did before from being here." And his wife, spoke up and said, "Well, he never read a book before, and now he has a book beside him so that at red lights he can stop and pick up the book to read."
Yeah, no, I know how it is. I have to have a book all the time. I can't travel in a on a train or a plane without a book.
Absolutely.
Books are your terrific friends. And when I look around the plane and I see people, not reading, I always think, how can they endure this,
Anna Quindlen, former columnist for the New York Times, wrote a book entitled Ruined for Reading, by Reading. And she has a great line in there, which I immediately resonated with. And she said, there's one room in our house where sometimes the books kind of get left because that's one of the places where you have time to read. And she said, you have it bad when you find yourself reading a Chilton repair manual for a 1967 Toyota Celica, and you don't even have a 1967 Toyota Celica. And I thought, that's
well,
exactly
I
right.
I think, but first you need how to read, and you need to read well, and it can't be a burden to read. And once you read well, that's just the most wonderful, wonderful gift, because it unlocks so many things.
Now, let me ask you, when you think about not just a national policy on this, but if you were speaking to parents of younger children, I think I know where you go with this, but I want to give you the opportunity. What would you advise them about how to raise readers?
I would read to the kids, and I would have books in the house. I know I have two new grandkids, and we're already buying them lots of books, and we're reading to them. And I think a parent should lead by example by reading books themselves and having books around. And we've been doing a little of this. We have as part of our We the People initiative, something called the We the People Bookshelf, which consists of 15 very high-quality books that we send to libraries, or K-12 books. And libraries bring kids in. They have programming around it. We have them on the great American values, courage and freedom, becoming American, the pursuit of happiness. And they brought in people from the military and firefighters and the like, and discuss these books. But I think the parents really have to take the lead here, and take the lead and pick up where the school leaves off, or where the school doesn't really unable to really get the kids to get interested and excited, or to teach them.
Absolutely. I think our kids are going to observe by watching us whether we think reading is really important, and frankly, whether we enjoy it. I would encourage people to read even if they don't enjoy it, but I tell you what, they're going to get a whole lot more out of it if they actually do enjoy it. And as they get better at it, they're going to discover that they'll lose themselves in a book.
Absolutely. It is the greatest gift, reading. It enlarges your imagination. It gives you critical skills. It just makes you a better person. I mean, world, the universes are opened.
Dr. Bruce Cole is chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Chairman Cole, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Folks, we're talking about reading, and the big question is this: how are you raising readers in your home? And if your kids don't read, are you concerned about this? Now, this opens a host of related questions, but we as Christians, I would argue, have a much deeper concern about this than just the secular world. A secular librarian says, I worry about the future of the book. Well, I'm not so much worried about the future of the book in itself. I'm worried about the future of souls. Christianity is, about a discipleship of literacy. If we're not reading, why not? What do we do about it? The phone number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. The topic is reading, and the crisis is that, well, it's pretty well attested. Our kids, as a rule, aren't reading. And that's of concern to secular educators. I would argue for Christian parents, has to be a deeper concern, because Christian discipleship is really largely based, at least at the educational level, in literacy. That's why Christians have been so invested in literacy. That's why Christians believed that the Bible must be translated into the vernacular common language so that the average man or woman, boy or girl, could read. If we're not reading, we've got a big problem. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Rusty's been waiting on the line from Townsend, Delaware, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Rusty.
Yes, I think you guys have said it. We started teaching my son to read at a very, reading to him at a very early age. He's now 13. He reads hundreds of books. He reads faster than his father ever could. And he's a straight-A student, and his goal so far is to be a youth pastor.
Wow. Well, I'm encouraged to hear about that young man. Rusty, let me test something here with you, because I think I can associate with this boy, because I really got the infectious bug to read, and let's just say it hasn't lessened in adulthood. If I am awake and not speaking or doing something else, I guarantee you I'm reading. I can't think of, you know, I go to the doctor's office, I got to have a book just to, even if there's a 5-minute wait, you know, I got to know what it is. I've got one in the car all the time. Let me ask you, do you ever have to get after him? Because when he's supposed to be going to bed and going to sleep, he just can't stop reading.
Oh, yeah, he would have the blanket with a flashlight over his head.
Oh, let me tell you, that's the kind of reader I love to hear about. Obviously, he's got to obey mom and dad, but, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that what he struggles with is obeying by putting that book down when he's got to. I love to hear about that appetite. And you did the right thing encouraging him to read, Rusty. I appreciate your call. I think that'll encourage other parents as well. Calling from Floyd Knobs, Indiana. Michelle's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I just wanted to tell you, my kids are just really avid readers, and I'm really proud of them. But I've been frustrated a lot with their teachers because they just don't have the expectation of the kids that they can read books that are on or above their grading level.
Yeah, so they're holding them back, is that it?
They try, yeah. You know, I know in the first grade they were limited to the kinds of books they could read. They had to pick from a certain shelf and weren't allowed to pick books for older kids. Last year in eighth grade, my son was reading The Adventures of Tom Sawyer in eighth grade, but it was the abridged version instead of the real book.
Well, Michelle, I appreciate your concern. Let me make a suggestion. Either take him into the bookstore or take him into the library and let him check out some books. I mean, obviously, you want to be discerning. You want to make sure it's the right kind of stuff for him to be reading. But let him stretch himself in terms of ability. You know, let him pick out a book where every once in a while he's got to go to the dictionary and figure out what the words are. And just affirm him in that. You're wonderful in your mom's instinct to know that he's being frustrated in school because they're pandering telling him that you know, this is his grade level. They're not encouraging him. And, you know, this is where, as a parent, you're the best teacher. You're the first teacher. And I would say, you know, look at the literature, but take him in a library or a bookstore and, you know, just let him pick out some stuff that'll stretch him. And you'll probably see some results there. Really, thank you for the call. Very quickly, let's go to Hank calling from Milltown, Indiana. Go ahead, Hank.
Oh, hello, Dr. Mohler. My story is much the same as Rusty's. My wife and I have one daughter, and we read as much as we could to her during the day. At night, at bedtime, we read a variety of books, especially Bible stories in the Bible. And she's now 12, and she has a passion for reading. She always has a book.
And at age 12, Hank, let me come back and say, you read to your daughter. When did you start reading to her?
Well, she was our foster daughter. We got her when she was 2. Then we adopted her a year later, and we started reading immediately when we got her as a foster daughter.
Yeah, I want to come back and affirm that. And obviously, your love for your daughter translated into reading to her and encouraging her to read is, well, it's one of those success stories that tells us that it is infectious. And the fact that you read to her, you know, just got a hold of her imagination so that she wants to read as well. My grandmother, my father's mother, was a public school teacher for many years, and she really believed in that as well. My parents read to me, but, you know, she kind of got us started on the Dr. Seuss books when I was just really tiny. And, you know, it gave me the sense, at least, that I could read even as a little kid. Because I'd probably just heard it so many times I knew it. I mean, one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. And by the way, yes, it sticks in your mind forever. And you start looking at that and you realize, you know, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to know what those words meant and put them all together. My mom tells the story that I went home, came home from the first day in the first grade and was just completely disappointed that I couldn't read every book. I thought, well, I've been to school for a whole day. It doesn't seem to have done much good. An appetite for reading, I would argue, is an infectious thing. And, you know, hopefully we can help our children to catch it. And, of course, we want them to read the right stuff. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. The National Endowment for the Arts federal agencies come out with a report entitled Reading at Risk, a Survey of Literary Reading in America. And what it indicates is that young adults, those about 18 to 25, who used to be the group most likely to read, especially literature, is now the group least likely. So you could blame it on electronic media. You can blame it on television and all the rest. You can blame it on what we've done to our kids' schedules in terms of all kinds of activities. You can blame it on their parents not reading. But for some reason, we're raising generations who do not read. I'd love to know what you as parents are thinking about this, doing about this with your own kids. The phone number, 877-893-8255. As I say, Christians have to have a much deeper sense of responsibility for this, because after all, we're not just about hoping they'll read to be good citizens. We're hoping they will read in order to be more mature and more faithful Christians, beginning with reading the Scripture, but also quality Christian books that will really make an impact in their lives. Let's go to Julie. She's calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Julie.
Yes, Dr. Mahler. I am really starting to wonder if reading really is infectious, because I have two kids, one that loves books and the other one, my son, who's 11, hates to read. We've read to him from early on. We've always had books around, and I'm a huge reader, and he hates to read. And I'm wondering what advice you have for parents like that who struggle.
Yeah, in what sense does he hate to read, Julie?
Just every month when the book report comes up, it's a fight to get him to do it. And in the summer, I've tried to encourage him with their library reading programs, and it is just, he would much rather be doing, he's a big math person. It's hard to find. I try to find books.
Are these story books that he's reading or not wanting to read primarily?
Say that again?
Are these story books? Is
yes.
This fiction? Okay, here's my suggestion. And having been an 11-year-old boy and having had one, here's my suggestion. Let me ask you a question. What does he really like? What subjects fascinate him?
You mean...
that's great. Yeah.
Cars.
Yeah.
He loves math. He loves science.
Okay. Let me suggest that you let him read in those areas. And I don't mean just let. I mean really incentivize reading in those areas. Because here's the thing. You're going to discover that boys and young men often do not tie into fiction. They think of fiction as feminine, and a lot of it is. They think of fiction as difficult for them to get a hold of, because sometimes it's difficult for them to jump into that world, and it just doesn't hold their fascination. But I guarantee you, an 11-year-old boy, as you say, with cars and scientific stuff and all the rest, there's going to be stuff he's interested in. And I would really, encourage him to read in those areas of nonfiction. I'll tell you, boys that age, you know, books about the things that can kill you and eat you. Books about, the fastest car, the tallest building, all that kind of stuff. It was really fascinating. And when I say incentivize, I mean that positively and negatively. You can really incentivize them by reading, but you've got to really also cut out the distractions. And one of the ways you can do this is earned media. That means one thing in the business world, but what I mean here is that if your son wants some time to watch a television program that you think's appropriate, if he wants some time, to be on the internet as you think appropriate, and is to play with his video games or whatever, let him earn access through reading. And, sometimes you're just trying to make them read in order that it will catch on. But you know what? I really believe that boys that age, if they're really interested in things, they want to know more about it, and they'll find themselves reading. And I wouldn't worry at this age too much about the fact he's not really keying into fiction, because I think you'll discover that, you know, a lot of boys that age don't. And if that's a problem, I would also try to find some fiction that might particularly play into a masculine interest. And, for instance, when I was his age, I was devouring the Hardy Boys mysteries. Now, they're a little campy and old now. Even the language is kind of funny. But, you know, my son, who's just a little bit older than yours, I mean, he's really fascinated by, you know, spies and crime solving and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, obviously there's some of that stuff you don't want him to read. But I think there, you know, for boys that age, there's some really good stories, military, spy, and others that can really have their attention. Does that help at all, Julie?
Yes, that's great. Thank you very much.
Good. Well, you're very welcome. And by the way, that is a problem. And one of the things that booksellers now tell us is that males are really falling out of reading fiction. And I think that's a problem. That's not my first problem. My first issue, my first concern would be Christians not reading the right kind of literature. And fiction is not number one on that list, although I love fiction. But the reality is that an awful lot of fiction is really feminine in terms of its storyline. You know, an 11-year-old boy is not going to be very interested in who falls in love with whom. And, you know, God bless him. We really should be happy about that. And 11-year-old boys aren't really tied into emotional responses to things. And an awful lot of fiction is really about emotional intuition and this kind of stuff. And, you know, if an 11-year-old boy is not in love with reading Jane Austen novels, he's probably a healthy 11-year-old boy. But if he's not really interested, if he's really honest in reading about the world's fastest car and most dangerous snakes, there is probably an issue. So, you know, play to your strength there and just encourage reading. I think one of the things parents can do to stifle reading too much is to say, I want you to read this book and you're going to enjoy it. Well, you know, you don't enjoy every book you read equally, and neither will your child. I'm not saying don't tell them they have to read the book. That's why you're the parent and you are the reading director. But I would also say when you know you really want to incentivize reading either as an add-on or as a way of helping them to learn the enjoyment of reading, you know, if you know he's really fascinated with cars, then find something you think is really worthwhile for a boy that age to read and slip it into his life and see if he doesn't disappear in order to read it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. The moments are ticking away. There's still time for you to call. That's 877-893-TALK. I will admit to you that my passion about this is also tied to the fact that I am a bibliophile. I love books. I'm surrounded by books. My personal library and study is where I just revel in the conversation with these books. I like to feel and touch of books. I like what Winston Churchill said. He said, buy books and collect them. And he said, even if you don't have time to read them right now, just go in and hold them and look at them and just understand that they are there as friends waiting to be read. Of course, the follow-up to this is how we help our children to read with discernment. But the first thing is they have to be able to read, and if I'm honest, if they're not really interested in reading, they're not going to do much. We do hope it's infectious. We got callers calling in from all over America. Obviously, this has touched a nerve, and that's encouraging to me in the first place. We'll get to as many of those calls as we can when we come back. The issue is reading. You know, the Christian church has centered in literacy for the very important reason that we believe that God has given us this gift. And he considers word so important, he gave us his word in the scripture that we might read it and know him. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Important Stuff, and we began this conversation by citing a lament, an article by a librarian in the Washington, D.C. area saying, my kids just don't read. Let's go to another librarian, Susan, calling from Clearwater, Florida. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling because, as you said, I was a librarian as well as an elementary school teacher, and most boys do not like to read. So I would try to get them to read books about sports, various kinds of sports, about sports heroes, about biographies of any person, whether a scientist or any historian or someone in history, someone that they would really relate to. And also, I found when I taught in Christian school especially that having them read biographies of different missionaries and other Christians from the past, it really made not only a spiritual impact, but it helped them to be interested in reading. And yeah, I'm trying to think of all the things I used to do. Also, as a parent, one could involve themselves and the family in what each one is reading and have different activities where it will draw the children into the books or draw what they've read out of them, too.
You know, Susan, all those suggestions are very good. And when I was thinking about what I was recommending for boys to read, I should have thrown in both of the categories you gave as sports and biographies. Those who know me aren't going to be surprised. I didn't think of sports right off. But I do understand that's what excites an awful lot of boys. And, you know, if they can read I just read a biography the other day, this new biography of Johnny Unitas. And even though I'm not an avid football fan, I have to tell you, I was just blown away by how much I learned about America during that time, about all kinds of things, just by reading that biography. And an awful lot of boys can be excited and incited, incentivized into reading, encouraged by that kind of literature, sports and biographies. Thanks for your call, Susan. And Susan also talked about family talking about reading. That's another thing. We do need to talk about it. And when I talk about a specific suggestion to parents, I'm going to come back to this. Look, you control access. Don't let your kids watch television rather than read. I didn't say don't let them watch television at all. That's your call. But don't let them do that rather than read. In other words, they need to earn access. They need to earn access to the video game. They need to earn access to the MP3 player. And, yes, you may be considered a tyrant, and no one else's parents may be doing this, but you're the ones who are going to give an answer to God for raising your children. And just consider this. Consider the lengths to which so many people in Christian history have gone to be able to read and have access to books. And, you know, access is really not our issue, not in America. It's actually the discipline of reading. Good conversation. When we come back another time, we're going to talk about adults in reading and how adults can develop both the habit of reading and the discipline of reading and inculcate this into our lives. After all, let's get back to the bottom line. If we don't read, we really shouldn't expect that our children are going to read much either. I appreciate your calls today and participation in this conversation. It's been worth having. And we'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'm Albert Moeller.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.